hand. It's just, God, it stinks.
Oh, Brad.
This is the worst assignment we've had yet, Avery.
Sarah, we had to go down into the dungeon below the recording studio. We were captured by demons.
And?
Yeah, I see your point. When does this stupid thing come out again? April 10th?
No, it's April 24th. The 10th is when they're letting people in to look at them.
Oh, that's 2 weeks from now.
It's more like 3.5 weeks. Get up. That's like the fourth time you've fainted.
Oh, don't wanna. Oh, this is the worst internship ever.
Shut up, Ainsley. They'll hear us.
How could they hear us? They're back in the studio about to record Apple Context Machine.
You never know, Ainsley. Just shut up.
Ouch, you're stepping on my toe.
Oops, like this.
Ouch, stop it, Sierra. You're so mean.
No, you stop it.
You stop it.
Stop.
Stop it. Ow, ow.
Ow, stop. Tell me.
Here.
Ow,
my hair.
Maybe it wasn't such a good idea to check in on them after all.
No. Probably not.
Think we should tell them you can't actually line up for the Apple Watch?
Nah, they need the exercise. Today is April 1st, 2015. This is episode number 300 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, puppet master. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com. So the interns are out there holding us a spot for the Apple Watch, huh?
That's so awesome. I'm glad that we have them around to wait in line for...
Now, didn't we run a piece today explaining that there won't be any lines for the Apple Watch?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what you're talking about.
Probably worth explaining just a little bit. We talked about it on TDO, but Apple is going to be using an appointment system only, but they're setting it up in such a way that you can set up an appointment as a walk-in. And they'll manage it so that there aren't a bunch of people that are just sort of waiting around in the stores. But there won't be opening lines like we've seen in the past. And, you know, the interesting thing about that, Jeff, is that we as Apple fans, especially when Apple was the underdog back in the day. You know, when oh my God, Apple is going to close up shop any day now was, you know, the ill-informed mainstream view. We like seeing those lines because it was sort of an affirmation of our own choices.
Sure. Yeah. It was great to see those lines, the big crowds. And
everyone had a good time. It was fun to be a part of them.
Yes.
It was fun to see them.
Yeah, it was. It was a great social event as well as a great publicity thing for Apple.
You're right. Right. But it turns out that Apple's competitors, especially the ones that are near Apple, don't appreciate those lines because it actually cuts down on the amount of business they get. It doesn't increase it.
Yeah, that's true. The Apple stores that are closest to me, it's always been difficult for them when big product launches happen because it doesn't matter if they're even in the same retail arena as Apple. Just their proximity is a problem. That people can't get through the lines to go to the other stores.
Right. And, you know, some people even just stay away when they see the lines because they don't want to hassle with them. But, you know, at the same time, too, it's always a source of liability for the mall operators.
Yeah, that's true.
So there's been pressure on Apple to eliminate the lines. And I think that's why we've seen the pre-orders, and that's why we've seen the reservation system. And it's like, it seems like the Apple Watch will kind of take that a step further and have everything be on an appointment basis because they want to strap the Apple Watch on you before you buy it. They want you to see it on your wrist before you buy it to make sure you're getting the right device.
I think that's really smart because this is a very personal piece of technology, and it's something you're going to be wearing all the time, and it's something that everyone else is going to be able to see a lot easier than an iPhone stuck in your pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's in Apple's best interest to make sure that people leave the store with the right Apple Watch.
Yeah, maybe we can tell the interns this, you know, I don't know, sometime before the... should we check in on them again later, like, you know, like in a week or two? Should we check in and see how they're doing in that line? Sounding kind of wet, rainy over there.
Yeah, I'll put a post-it note somewhere. Yeah.
Speaking of which, lynda.com is our sponsor this week.
Which is awesome.
Uh-huh, it is. Much more awesome than us keeping the interns waiting in line for us.
I see this as an awesome thing, too.
You would think that the intern, I mean, admittedly, a line is any 2 points, but you would think that they would notice that they are the only 2 points in this particular line.
Yep.
Anyway.
Well, see, they also think they're going to get some really awesome points with us because they managed to get first place in line.
It's.
And who am I to take that away from them?
Exactly. We're just looking out for them. So lynda.com is our sponsor. lynda.com/ACM. We're going to talk about them a little bit later.
Cool.
That's good stuff.
Cool.
We like the folks at Lynda a whole lot. And that's no fooling. This is April Fool's Day. That's no fooling.
Yeah, it's like a big day. It's April Fool's Day. It is Apple's 39th anniversary. And it's episode 300 of Apple Context Machine.
Episode 300. How about that?
That's pretty awesome. And we still have our interns.
Well, theoretically, yeah.
Well,
chances are at this particular moment, we still have our interns. Chances are. That can't be confirmed or denied particularly at this point.
Well, that's all anyone can ask.
That's true. Okay, now this, there were people who actually thought this might have been an April Fool's joke. Right? Amazon's doing this thing.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, it's kind of funny because people thought Amazon was doing an April Fool's joke with this new thing they're calling the Dash that lets you place orders for specific products just by pressing a button somewhere in your house.
So it's a physical button that Amazon would send to you, and you stick that button somewhere. And when the product, when you want to order more of the product that button represents, and it's one product per button,
mm-hmm.
you push the button.
And then it automatically places an order through your Amazon Prime account, and everything gets shipped, shows up in a couple of days, and there you go.
I am so torn on this thing.
You know, the idea of having all these little product logos on buttons scattered around my house is kind of distasteful.
Yeah.
Because basically what they're doing is they're taking my house and turning it into an Amazon order page, the entire house.
Yes. I don't like that. I don't want more advertising in my house. I don't want more advertising in my life.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I can see where for some people this would be a really useful thing. You know.
Yes.
Okay. So
that's true.
Here's an example. You're a parent and you have a baby, and so you get an Amazon Dash button for your Huggies diapers, and you stick it on the side of the changing table in the baby's bedroom. And you're changing a diaper, and you look over and you realize you only have one package left, and that's going to go quick. So without even having to stop what you're doing, you just reach over, tap the button real quick, and keep going. 2 days later, you have all the diapers you need.
Right. I kind of wish we hadn't, because, you know, the disposable diapers, it's such... Look.
I know, it's a fact of our culture.
But it's actually a good example, because that's the kind of thing you don't necessarily want to have on a subscription, right? You know, one of the things that you can do with Amazon Prime is you can subscribe to products and have them delivered on a periodic basis, and you get a substantial discount for doing so.
Mm-hmm.
right? And diapers are one of those things that you need a lot of, but you don't necessarily need them delivered every month, every 2 months, every 3 months, or maybe even every week. I don't know if you can do every week. It's the kind of product that you actually may need frequently. And of course, with diapers too, you don't necessarily want a subscription because you're not going to be using the same product for very long as your baby grows.
That's true.
So that is a really good example. But, you know, the image that you use was for Bounty, for paper towels.
Yes.
And you could just go order some more paper towels.
That's true. But on the other hand, you could stick one of these in the cabinet where you keep your paper towels and you grab your last roll and there's the button. So you just tap it and don't even think about it. I mean, I can see where this is. It could be really convenient, but I still don't think it's something that I want in my own home.
Yeah, and I'm trying not to be change resistant here. I'm trying not to be like, hey, get off my lawn, take your advertising with you. And
it's the fact that it's all these logos plastered all over my house that I find distasteful.
But the flip side of that, to play devil's advocate to my own curmudgeonness, is that it certainly makes sense to have the logo of the product that the button represents on there, so you know what the heck it is you're ordering.
Yeah, that's true.
There's a practical aspect to this. I'm not overly keen at the idea of turning my house into advertisement for Amazon and for the products Amazon sells.
Yeah, it's okay. Now, to play devil's advocate to that, as you look around...
Wait, so is this devil's advocate, or would this be the advocate for the devil's advocate, or would this be the re-advocation?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, I'm tired now.
I can understand why, because just wow. Anyhow, okay, look around your desk right now. Mm-hmm. How many Apple logos do you see?
That's... I plead the fifth.
Yeah, and
we're pricking up.
Yeah, and the only reason I felt comfortable asking that was because right before I did, I looked around my desk.
Uh-huh.
And there is a number that is substantially greater than one representing the Apple logos that I can see from right here.
Yeah, and that is such an interesting thing because Apple is one of those logos that its fans love to promote.
Sure,
right? We're actually tense that we can't buy Apple T-shirts in the Apple Store.
That's a good point. Yes, and actually, one of the Apple logos I have, it's on a notebook, spiral notebook.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
You turned me on to those.
That's because they're awesome.
They are awesome. Yeah, it's sitting right here on my desk.
You can buy those
right
in the corporate store at One Infinite Loop.
Yes. So when I go to the corporate Apple store, I always buy a few of their spiral notebooks, and typically I buy a new pen.
Yeah.
So I actually right now, from where I'm looking at my desk, I can see three Apple pens.
Right. So, you know, there's a logo we're proud to show off. And, you know, and Coca-Cola was the first company to start this, where they actually put logos on T-shirts. And there was a section of Coca-Cola products. I think it was at Sears. And it was like a really big deal because people were suddenly being asked to pay for a shirt advertising a soft drink. And this was at that time, it was unheard of. This was in the 80s. Do you remember the kerfuffle? Were you paying attention to things like that at the time?
I wasn't really paying attention to that, but I do remember when we went from just the T-shirts that we had to the ones that suddenly had product logos all over them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a very fast change. And so Coca-Cola started it, and then everyone else jumped on board.
Right, it quickly became. Prior to that, about the only logo you ever saw on a shirt was like the Polo logo.
That's what I was just thinking. The Polo logo, the Izod logo.
And the Izod logo too. Yeah, good point. Nike.
Yep.
Nike put its own stuff on its own clothes for sure. Anyway, the point is that things have changed, and certainly today Apple is one of those logos that we don't mind, and it's kind of ridiculous. from a very objective level-headed standpoint, it is kind of ridiculous to love the Apple logo on products in my house and then be cranky about the Bounty logo.
Yeah, well, okay. There's also the fact that the logos that you don't mind seeing around your house typically aren't bright, garish colors. But the types of logos that we have on the Amazon dash buttons are for products that you're otherwise picking up in a grocery store. And you know how flowers do the thing where they always try and be the brightest and the loudest so that the bees come by and grab their pollen? That's kind of how product packaging works in grocery stores. You got to be the brightest and the loudest to catch someone's attention. And so now we're just going to be sticking that on our walls and cabinets.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I don't know. All right. So let me play devil's advocate. Amazon truly is innovating in the retail space.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
and as some of their things have really struck me as bad things. For instance, encouraging people to showroom, which is to use brick-and-mortar stores belonging to their competitors.
Like Best Buy,
to go and look at products that you then order from Amazon. We've talked about that a lot before, and I'm going to stop myself before I go into a long rant about it. And I also think that in many ways, Amazon represents a race to the bottom that will suck quality out of every market where they can dominate.
Yes.
We've talked a lot about that too.
Now here's the other side of that. There are a lot of retailers that have chosen for whatever reason to carry very specific products that they can sell en masse. And if it's not something that they can sell at the same high level as everything else in their store, they've just stopped carrying it. But yeah. Amazon has everything. So even though I can go into any store and buy deodorant, the deodorant that I want to use, which is an unscented deodorant, I can't get in most stores, even though it's just regular, like, Arid something. But I can order, like, a case off Amazon, and I'm just done, which is finally what I did. I gave up trying to do the crapshoot of hoping the one store that sometimes has my deodorant has some this week.
Yeah. Yes. I agree. There are plenty of things that I order from Amazon too, despite my misgivings. And part of that is because one of the innovations they brought is the subscriptions that I mentioned.
Sure.
You can subscribe to a product that's actually quite handy, and the discount that comes with it, quite handy.
And really smart.
And Amazon has just done some enormous innovations in terms of its logistics. In terms of its, you know, order fulfillment, in terms of its warehouse management, I am compelled to note that they also are notorious for paying their warehouse employees very, very poorly and offering very poor working conditions, and I don't like that.
Right. Although they did just change their ridiculous non-compete clause for hourly and seasonal workers,
which is good.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, they dropped that from their contracts.
So, I mean, you know, there's good and bad with Amazon, but they've done a lot of innovating. They've done a lot of innovating on the backside. They have leveraged their extraordinary prowess on back-end management to launch, you know, to diversify, which kind of plays into a later topic that we're going to have, into cloud services, right? You know, what's it called? Amazon Cloud? It's called Amazon Cloud, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is pretty much a best-in-class service, you know, and it's the kind of thing that really makes Amazon a sort of technology company in addition to being a retailer.
Oh, that's true. So anyway, well, their S3 service, I mean, that's a huge thing for a lot of very big companies.
And a lot of small companies, because they have access
Yeah, that's true.
To big boy stuff. when they're not big boys or big girls, as the case may be.
Big kids.
So big kids, thank you. So, you know, Amazon has done truly a lot of innovating, and some of the things work, some of the things don't, some of the things are good, some of the things are bad. Most of it is pretty innovative, though, and it certainly has been disruptive. So maybe Amazon Dash? So Amazon Dash, maybe that's the thing. Maybe we all need buttons all over our house so that we can reorder products without having to go to our computer and log in.
Or pull your iPhone out of your pocket.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't plan on getting any, though.
I'm not getting any, first because I haven't renewed my Amazon Prime subscription, but even if I had, I think right now they're not offering any products that to me would be compelling enough to want to get a button. Mm. So yeah, it looks like I'm not a candidate for that either.
Yeah. But there probably will be people that are.
Oh, I think so. And I'm betting there are people out there that are looking at this as a godsend. And for those people, great.
You know what else is great?
Chocolate cake?
Yes. Anything else?
Getting smart.
Spoiler alert! Lynda.com/ACM. Great.
So I was right. Getting smart.
Getting smart. Yes, you were. I didn't hear you.
That's because you were just talking all over me.
I know.
Just as I am just totally stealing the show.
As one does.
But anyhow, yes, Lynda.com. They're our sponsor this week, and that's absolutely awesome.
So what they're doing, what they do in general, is they make training tutorials for you to learn stuff. Word.
And
Photoshop.
Yes. The InDesign, pages. WordPress.
Quark Express. Is that still a thing?
Yes. Oh my God. Quark Express, 2015. It's coming out in just a few days. I'm not kidding.
No fooling there, huh?
No fooling. That's
all right,
totally
so
true.
Quark Express is still a thing, I hear.
Yep.
Pages, numbers.
How about Lego Mindstorms?
Do they do Lego Mindstorms?
No kidding. You can learn how to program Lego Mindstorms at Lynda.com.
That is so cool.
I know.
They have, it's like more than 3,000.
Yes, and they're adding more every month.
Yeah, all the time, and they're taught by great people. And here's the thing. They're sponsoring us, right? So we love them in part because they sponsor us, but we actually just love them.
I loved Lynda before they were sponsoring us. As a matter of fact, I have danced at parties with Lynda. That's how much I love them and love Lynda.
Fair enough. And because they're sponsoring us, you get the opportunity to try out Lynda.com for free for 10 days. 10 days. 10 days for free.
That's pretty impressive.
You can go learn anything that you want to. For free for 10 days. Go learn it. Go take this opportunity. They're giving all of our listeners the opportunity to learn something for free for 10 days. We said that before, and it just bears repeating. It's so cool that they are providing people this opportunity, because I personally I'm just such a huge fan of learning something.
So am I. I feel like if I'm not learning, that I'm not really living.
Yeah. Learning is living.
It is.
Living is learning.
And
so so you can go to lynda.com/ACM. You can sign up and for a free trial.
Free trial for how long?
10 days. Ten days. And you can watch anything you want. It's not like you can watch some things for 10 days. You actually can.
You can
literally
watch
do
everything as much as you can possibly fit into 10 days worth of time. That's what you can watch.
And the beauty is that even if you were taking some dangerous drugs and staying up straight for 10 days, you still probably couldn't go through everything. You could not go through everything.
No, it would be physically impossible.
That's how much stuff they have to teach you.
You'd need a TARDIS.
You need a TARDIS and a place to park them all as you camped somewhere in multiple instances of the same time. Anyway, the point is...
This is why you need a TARDIS, Brian.
10 days for free. lynda.com/ACM. Check them out. You should sign up. You should go and learn something. Just go and learn something. That's all I want. Tell us what it is you learned.
Yes, go get smart and then wow us with your brilliance, please.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Let's see here. We have some mail.
No.
Yeah, we do. From Paul Norman.
Oh, excellent. Hi, Paul.
Now, I haven't actually read through this because I just saw it. So I'm going to just read it, and it could be awful. He could be slamming us. And he goes, "Hi, Jeff. I listen to your podcast with Brian as though you are my mates, nattering over a beer down the pub. Woo-hoo! Yes, I'm British, and I love your decency, learning and hearing Brian's railroad neighbor. Just wanted to add to your podcast about Tim Cook's successor. I've always thought buying Beats Wood was odd unless Tim was putting in place Jimmy Iovine as a potential successor. Just an idea. Very kind regards, Paul Norman." Sent from his iPhone. Now, first of all, I'm so delighted that he wasn't saying awful things about us as I was reading that.
So am I, especially since he started with "Hi, Jeff."
So totally true. This does bear some brief commentary, though, because Jimmy Iovine is 60. He's older than Tim Cook.
Oh, that's a good point.
Mr. Iovine looks rad, and I'm using that word carefully, looks rad for a man who's 60 years old, but I don't think he's there to succeed Tim.
I do agree with you, although, Paul, I do find the idea that Jimmy Iovine is brought on board as a successor to be a very interesting thought. I think, though, that Tim has a very specific agenda for Jimmy. Mm-hmm. And he needs Jimmy high up in the ranks where he is. And I think Jimmy is going to continue to be a very powerful persona in the music industry. It just so happens that Apple is on his business card now.
Yeah, music and possibly movies and
yeah, I think he has a very critical role to play in Apple's place in the entertainment market.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely an interesting thought, though, Paul. And thanks for the note.
Yeah, hi, Paul.
Now I tend to leave notes at geektells.com.
I like the notes you leave at geektells.com. I also like your drawings.
I sometimes call them posts. Whatever, it's my blog. It's my personal blog. It's the place that where I put things that aren't germane to the Mac Observer.
And it's
geektells.com.
And it's interesting what you're putting at geektells.com. I have loved following along through the process as you have worked on your novel.
Why? Thank you. That is in fact one of the things I use for it. Been haven't posted for a while. I'm not going to say that. Yeah, I'll just erase that so people don't know that I haven't posted a while. But that is my blog. Your blog is freshbrewedtales, TALES.com.
Yes, and that's where I talk about the things that I see people do when I'm in coffee shops. I'm always paying attention when I'm out and about, and I see some really interesting things happen. And by interesting things, in many cases, I mean ridiculous things. Like just recently, I watched a woman take up two tables in a coffee shop, mm-hmm. and I believe five chairs all to herself.
When I say she sits around the table, she sits around the table.
Something like that. But it's not like she was a very large person that needed to have multiple chairs to support her. I mean, she looked physically fit. And she just apparently needed all this space to set up her laptop and her books and her backpack.
Was it crowded?
It was crowded.
I don't like that sort of myopic self-centeredness. I don't care for it. But you can read about it at freshbrewtales.com.
Yes, and I'm about halfway through a site redesign. So I'd love your feedback on that too. Unlike other people who painstakingly work on a site redesign and then deploy it at once, I sat down and was like, time for a change. And I'm doing it while the site is live.
Fair enough. All right. So we have, let's see here. What else do we have? We have Tesla. Tesla expanding its product line to some kind of not a car thing.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting.
It is very interesting. So Elon Musk, the visionary CEO of Tesla, tweeted that his company will be launching a new product, not a car, on April 30th, I think it was.
Right, end of the month. So April 30th.
This was March 30th when he gave that little tweet. And the informed speculation, it's not even really informed speculation because Elon Musk has said that his company was working on a stationary home battery product. So everyone expects it to be related to that. But my question is, what is this stationary home battery product? I've been mystified since for the last 2 days.
Well, I've had a couple ideas. And one idea is, what if Tesla is looking at... Oh, and by the way, isn't it awesome that we have listeners that helped us make sure that we pronounce Tesla correctly? Just on a side note.
I was still pronouncing it wrong. It's Tesla. Tesla. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Thank you for gently reminding me when I deserve to not have a gentle reminder. Tesla. So go anyway. What are your ideas?
Okay. One is, what if Tesla is looking at the way we handle solar collector systems for our homes right now, which is, in some cases, you might have these very bulky battery packs out in the garage to give you a small buffer, but then everything you're not using, the rest of it, it just gets fed right back into the electric power grid. And so then you get credit through the power company for the electricity you're feeding back into the system. What if they're designing something that lets you more efficiently store the surplus electricity you're generating from solar power?
You know, I would think, I like that idea, and it, as you were saying that just now, it gave me an idea. But I would think that you know, for use in the consumer solar market would have been part of the pitch. Would have been part of the pitch during the conference call with analysts when he has mentioned this in the past. What if instead? What if we sort of broaden that? And this is like a UPS. They're making a UPS for your home.
It's like you read my mind. Because the other thing I was thinking is, what if they want to make a UPS for our home, and then the icing on the cake, they've figured out a way to make this UPS, meaning uninterrupted power supply, so efficient that it's actually more cost effective to have one in your home than not.
How would they do that?
I don't know. But this is Tesla.
That's just weird. Well, it's just weird. Where did that come from?
Okay, so there are companies that have developed like line conditioning systems that you can connect to your house that allow you to use the current more efficiently. And I'm sorry, I can't elaborate because I don't know how these things work. So, but there are ways to take the electricity you're getting in your home already and use that power more efficiently, so that your power bill is lower. What if Tesla has figured out a way to do something like this on a scale where it's actually less expensive, or where your power bill will be lower because you have this in your home than if you don't?
Yeah, I'm not going to buy into that.
Well, still, UPS side, we're in agreement.
Yeah,
on that.
UPS. That's something that's potentially very nifty. So, like, the UPS market currently is centered around products that are like you would hook up to your computer. Mm-hmm. You know, some sort of any kind of critical electronic device, even like if, you know, you could theoretically have a UPS on your fridge if that's what you were wanting to do, although that's probably not a great idea, but you know, no. You don't want your computer shutting off in the middle of a power outage and for people that live in unstable power districts, they can be really, really important. And for anyone who lives in an area that can be affected by emergencies, it can obviously be a big deal too.
Yes.
And that, you know, God, this, I like this.
I like this idea too.
Because with global warming comes more disasters.
Yes.
With climate change,
yes.
Period.
With climate change, yes.
More any kind of climate change. In this case, we're talking about global warming. Don't forget that climate change was the term invented by Republicans to not say global warming.
Well, that's lucky.
Yeah, and now, anyway, that's another topic for another
With
discussion.
Climate change, it means it's not going to be quite as hot and uncomfortable, right?
Yes.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
Precisely.
How many uninterrupted power supplies do you have or that you're using right now?
None.
Oh, Brian.
I know. It's ridiculous.
I have two under my desk right now. One handles my computer and the associated hard drives. Mm-hmm. And the other handles all of my network infrastructure. So
that's the way to do it. But what if Tesla has come up with a way, has come up with a way of making something that's reasonably priced for your entire home so that your entire home could operate for, say, 6 hours or a day. Well, that would be a significant charge.
That would be fantastic. I mean,
that would be pretty interesting. A stationary home battery product.
I would love to have something like that. Okay, now what if they take it a step farther? As long as we're just throwing speculation out here, willy-nilly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They could do something for your home. What if they can figure out a way where people that are renting, say like apartments, could have something like this as well?
Yeah, I doubt that.
I'm aware of that.
I imagine this is going to be aimed at homeowners.
I would assume so. But can you imagine if there was a way for someone in an apartment to be able to cost effectively and without taking up a lot of space, make sure that they have 4 hours of electricity?
Yeah, no, because people who are renting apartments can't afford it in the first place. In general. Yeah, it's going to be aimed at homeowners, man.
Of course. But don't... Just shut up. This is a cool idea.
All right. So let's actually step back a little bit. The renters, the poor renters, and I'm a poor renter, by the way, just for the record. The poor renters aside. Tesla is leveraging its expertise in batteries to enter some kind of tangential market.
Mm-hmm.
Apple has been leveraging its expertise in hardware and software to enter tangential markets. There's their MP3 player market, the smartphone market,
home entertainment,
tablets,
now watches,
cars.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what struck me today is that the industrial giants of old, and I'm thinking of like GE.
Okay.
GE in particular. Samsung. Yeah, these are companies that are once upon a time were considered large. Samsung is still pretty large, and GE, quite frankly,
Samsung is fracking huge.
Yeah, but they don't bring in as much money as Apple.
Okay.
Just for the record.
That's true.
But they're huge. GE used to be just this juggernaut huge thing. You know, they made everything from light bulbs to nuclear generators.
Right.
And large turbines for, you know, hydroelectric plants and other kinds of electricity generation plants. And and about everything else in between. Just all kinds of things. And that used to be what industrial giants did, is they diversified into more and more and more and more and more markets. And sometimes they would split companies off, and sometimes they might buy other companies. But it was always about diversification.
Mm-hmm.
Now, since the 70s, maybe even since the 60s, technology companies, starting with IBM, maybe Intel, Fairchild Semiconductor.
Wow.
Certainly Apple, Microsoft. You know, these are companies that all stayed pretty much in the technology world, mostly.
Yes.
And diversification in the technology world used to be like, are we going to make printers? You know, or are we going to make servers? Are we going to provide services to corporations or not?
Right.
You know, and then, of course, Microsoft very much tried to take all its money and dominance in Windows and productivity. And they used to try to enter a lot of new markets. But they were always technology markets. So search, you know, Microsoft had to be in search because search was a thing.
Still kind of is.
The Microsoft had to be in home gaming because the PlayStation was a thing.
Right.
But again, these are still all like technology related things. You know, Apple is breaking that mold a little bit. They're getting into cars. And Tesla, the car company. That is going to take some breaking.
I am going to offer you good-natured ribbing to help you retrain your pronunciation.
Absolutely. I appreciate that because I do want to get it right. So Tesla is entering some kind of home battery market that may or may not already exist. And so here we have two technology companies that are diversifying outside of what we would once have thought of as technology companies. And I find it interesting. And I think that this is like this sort of symbolic representation of the fact that today's tech companies are yesterday's industrial giants.
Yeah, that it is interesting. And I do find it interesting that for all the changes that we've seen in big industries over the last 100 years, that we've got this cycle where the big companies hit a point even today where they diversify.
Yeah. And that's you know, some of this diversification will fail. And I personally don't think a lot of the technology companies are well suited to diversification outside of their core companies. Google's probably an exception. Google's also going into cars. We know this for a fact.
Yes, we do.
And they certainly have, you know, there's Google Glass was an extension. It was still tech, and cars are still tech. I mean, I know it's all relatively interesting, but we are in the midst of sea changes of all sorts.
Oh yes, we are. Yeah, we have computer companies that are getting into cars. We have car companies that are getting into other markets, presumably home power systems. And then we have
stationary home battery product. What the heck is that? Sorry, go ahead.
It's intriguing.
Please.
That's what it is. Yeah, we have internet search companies that are into robotics and cars and mapping.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have all these companies just trying out all these different things as they expand and grow, and that's smart because if they rely on the same thing all the time, they probably are eventually going to fail. And there are certain exceptions to that rule. I mean, we have companies like Coca-Cola. What they do is they make soft drinks.
They do a lot more than that these days.
But they do a lot more than that these days. Now, that's true. Hewlett-Packard, they've had this part of their business most people don't even realize is that they make scientific instruments.
That's true.
And how about Coors, the beer company? during the...
I'm sorry, who?
The beer company out of Golden, Colorado.
Yeah, what are they called again?
The beer company out of Golden, Colorado.
Yeah, I think they have a name. What's that name?
I'm pretty sure they just changed it. New corporate filing, Brian is a jerk. Anyhow, Coors Diversified back during Prohibition.
Hold on, is that a Missouri thing? That particular, I mean, where does that come from? Because I've always personally heard it pronounced Coors.
Right.
So I'm actually just curious, where does Coors come from?
It's probably a speech impediment from having learned to speak in Kansas City.
Dialects are legitimate, in my opinion.
Yeah, seriously, I'm assuming it is. I mean, there's other words that people enjoy pointing out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Just by people, you mean me.
Yet my nieces enjoy pointing out some of the words too.
Oh, I see. All right, so it's good. I'm on the mental level of a 12-year-old, 8-year-old, 9-year-old.
Yes, yes, you are.
Yeah, go me. So anyway, Coors. You were saying something about Coors, the beer company.
Yes, during Prohibition, they started making scientific equipment also. So like beakers mortar and pestle, you know, the ceramic type and glass devices or equipment that you need in labs. And that's been a huge business for them, but most people don't even realize it.
They're in the snack business too.
And they're in the snack business. Yep.
Yeah. So diversification has always been a thing. Now we're starting to see technology companies diversify too. It'll be interesting to see if anyone can follow in Apple's footsteps. And of course, you know, we mentioned Samsung. Samsung is already huge. I mean, they make all of the things, really. There's a lot more than smartphones and computers and TVs from Samsung, because they do toasters and fridges and toaster fridges and blenders and washing machines and cars
and ships like big ships.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Robots.
Robots, right?
Semiconductors.
Lots and lots of things. I mean, they pretty much control the South Korean economy at this point, and that's probably a bad thing, but that's maybe a topic for another show.
Maybe they should just rename the country. Welcome to Samsungia. Samsungenstein.
Speaking of renaming companies.
Uh-huh. I just can't wait to hear where you're going with this, because I really don't know.
I think Steve Wozniak, the Woz, or Woz, depending on whether or not you're talking about him or talking to him.
Right.
Mostly pedantic. It's almost like he thinks that Apple should be renamed to, like, you know, not my Apple.
Well, Steve has his ideas. The Woz has his ideas about what Apple is, what Apple was, and what Apple should be. And that's okay. We're all entitled to our opinions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's just, I think his opinion would have Apple running as an out-of-the-garage kind of a weekend project where you're making kits for electronics fans.
Well, all right. So let's talk. Let's start off with what he said and where he was being interviewed as part of a keynote presentation for a conference at What's Next: The Future of Technology in Chicago. And this would have been Wednesday, towards the end of March, about a week ago. I guess it was a week ago. And he said, "I'm going to buy the Apple Watch, but just the cheapest one." And he also said that the high-end Apple Watch edition, this is the gold Apple Watch, that's either $10,000 or $17,000. He said that didn't seem like the company we started. That's not the Apple that moved the world forward. And he went on to criticize. He said that he thought that the only difference between the $10,000 Apple Watch edition and the $17,000 Apple Watch edition in rose gold was just a band.
Well, he's wrong. It's different material in the case. But anyhow.
Yeah, that's actually the biggest thing, is it's a different material. And he, I don't know, it seems like he's a watch guy. He wears watches all the time. It seems like he would understand that.
Well, okay.
Watch bands can be expensive, but I'm wondering to that point, it's not a $7,000 difference.
Yeah. Yes. And on the watch thing for Wozniak, being someone that is not a watch person and then hearing the things that he's saying, I come into this with a different perspective than you might. And I'm betting that he's a watch person in the sense that there's all these companies that have been making these high-tech wrist products, and that's what he wears. And he's not the guy that's out buying the watches that you have. What do you have, Zenith?
I've got a Zenith, but yeah, I don't know. I bet you that Steve Wozniak owns a Patek Philippe, maybe an A. Lang & Sons.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not sure either, but I also have no doubt that he's owned plenty of Timexes in his time.
Oh, yeah. My guess is that he's owned more of those than any other type of watch.
That's an old school engineer's watch.
Yeah.
For sure.
And he probably had the one that had the calculator on it. That was Casio.
Casio. Oh, I'm sure he had some of those. But here's the thing. I actually think I love Woz. Or the Woz. I think he's awesome. I think that what he did with the Apple, designing the Apple One, and more importantly, what he did designing the Apple II almost single-handedly is one of the great engineering feats of all time.
Oh, yeah. He is brilliant. He is amazing. And no one should sell him short. I mean, he's done incredible things that have had a huge impact, not just on us as Apple product users, but the entire industry.
Yes. He's an amazing individual. The things that he has had such a huge impact on this world. And I respect him. He is the man was a teacher. The man, as a very wealthy man, right, after he left Apple, he went and taught elementary school for several years because he loves teaching and he loves kids. I mean, that's fantastic.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, he's a good person and he is an amazing person. But I think in this particular regard, he's wrong. He's wrong in two ways. He's complaining that about the expensive Apple Watch Edition in such a way that my gut feeling is that he's looking at that device as a pointless piece of jewelry that Apple is releasing to bilk money out of people who have more money than they know what to do with. And that's not what the Apple Watch Edition is about. The Apple Watch Edition has a very specific role to play in bringing wearable computing to the lives of ordinary people.
Yes. Yeah. Apple Watch could have been announced without the Edition model. So there'd just be the Sport and Apple Watch. Mm-hmm. And that would have been fine. But with Apple Watch Edition, Apple is making sure that the technologies that it designs and releases today are the gateways to the future for technology that becomes much more personal and as such is also a bigger part of our own personal fashion statement.
Yes. Yeah, what I wrote last week is that this version of the device exists to make Apple Watch the first wearable computer that transcends function and form, that combines elegant jewelry with practical use, that makes people think differently about wearable computers. The vast majority of people will not own an Apple Watch Edition. The vast majority of Apple Watch owners will not own the Edition.
Right. Yes.
The Apple Watch Edition is a limited run device. It exists to make the Apple Watch both fashion and technology. And in fact, it sits at the intersection of art and technology, of fashion and technology.
And that's very much a Steve Jobs philosophy. He was all about sitting at the intersection of...
Yes, of the humanities and technology is what he'd always say. Sometimes it'd be art, but it was usually the humanities and technology.
Right.
And that is a product that precisely does just that. It sits at this technology, at this intersection of technology and art. It is very expensive to you and to me and to most of the people listening to this program, to this podcast. I'm old. But that doesn't, it doesn't change where this product sits. And it doesn't change the role it will play in making wearable computers something that's not for geeky tech people, but something for ordinary people, even though ordinary people can't afford it.
Right. And yes, and this is something Apple has been doing for a long time in different ways. Taking the technology and making it something more for the ordinary people. And in some ways, I think that it's been kind of a subtle thing, like the design of the aluminum case on a MacBook Air.
Mm-hmm.
I think that totally plays into what Apple has been doing. And the culmination we're seeing is, at least for now, is Apple Watch.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's okay that we can't afford it. Because guess what? Most people can't afford Apple's other products. Most people can't afford a $3,000 computer. Most people can't afford a $1,500 computer these days.
That's true.
And right? Most people can't afford... The vast majority of people cannot afford an iPhone.
Right. The only reason most people, I think, can get iPhones is because they are essentially financing them through their cell service plan.
Most people can't even afford that, though.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Right? Most people can't afford the $200 down for the entry-level iPhone 6. And they can't afford the high prices of the subsidized contracts, too. And I'm not being an elitist here. I mean, these are economic facts. You know, the average price of a PC these days is, I think, $379. It's right around $400 plus or minus a few bucks, right?
Right. Apple's and what you get for that is price, a disposable computer. But anyhow, yes, continue.
Yeah. Yes. Apple's average price is over $1,000. I don't know exactly what it is, but it's over $1,000. And most people can't afford that. Does that somehow mean that Apple's Macs and iPhones aren't devices for the rest of us just because not everybody can afford it? No. And the Apple Watch Edition doesn't change where it will change the rest of the product line because, again, its role is to make this device more than just geeky technology. It has a very specific role to play in Apple's job of disrupting the way we think about our wrists and the way we think about watches and the way we think about wrist top technology and the way we think about wearable computing.
And that's a big thing for Apple. They're about disruption.
Yes. And getting back to this Apple Watch Edition sitting at the intersection of art and technology, that is exactly the Apple that Steve Wozniak co-founded with Steve Jobs. It is precisely the same Apple. It's a different, it looks different on the surface, but at its heart, it is the same thing.
If it looked the same on the surface, that would mean Apple had never progressed.
Yeah.
In the past nearly 40 years.
Yeah. And don't forget that Steve Wozniak also always had a bit of a fight going on with Steve Jobs on the nature of products being open or closed. You know, the Apple II was very open. You could add your own cards to it, for instance.
Which was awesome. I love that.
And that was Steve Wozniak. Because Steve Wozniak believes that if you have a piece of computing, you should be able to dig into its guts and figure out what makes it tick. Because he's an engineer. He's a fiddler. Steve was Steve Jobs was all about making something that is whole and complete and perfect and pretty and beautiful and made people's lives easier at the end.
Steve Jobs wanted to make the appliance. Steve Wozniak wanted to make the tinkerer's dream.
Yeah. Steve Jobs wanted to make the beautiful appliance, for what it's worth. Right. Yes. And so, again, I think Mr. Wozniak has it wrong on this, but I also think he's probably going to end up coming around. Could be wrong about that too, but I think he's probably going to end up becoming a big fan of the Apple Watch. That'd be my guess. Don't really have any evidence of that. I haven't spoken to him about it.
I think
his gut reaction here that this isn't the Apple that he started with Steve. I think he's wrong. I think he's just dead wrong. And I think that the Apple fans who are upset about this expensive watch are also, with all due respect, frankly, wrong. And that it's okay that we can't afford the Apple Watch Edition. It really is okay.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. Especially because Apple went through the process of figuring out how they wanted to do this to the point where they were like, okay, we need to have three different levels. And in those levels, we need to have multiple price points so that we can make this something that a broader range of people are going to be able to afford.
Right.
And and it's one of those things where before, for me, it was what capacity iPhone do I want? Then it was what capacity and what color. And so they've kind of built this up to now where it's, okay, what color and what size and what band do I want for my watch? Which, by the way, I finally figured out.
Oh, do tell.
I'm going with Apple Sport Black 38 millimeter. I'm going with a smaller screen size.
Well, you say that. You still got to try it, man.
I'm going to try it, but
I think the 38 millimeter is going to work for you, but you need to try it before you truly buy it.
Okay. Well, here's what I'm doing. And this is after I printed out the scale images of the watch so that I could see everything looks. I'm going to buy the 38 millimeter. I'm going to pre-order the 38 millimeter on the 10th. And schedule mm-hmm. my appointment to try it on the 10th as well, so that I can go in and try the 38 and the 42 millimeter. And then if I decide that I've made a mistake, hopefully I can change my order and still get what I want in time or on shipping day.
You should try it on we should have put my Zenith on here.
We should have. I'll just jet on over real quick.
Yeah. Well, come through the glass.
Yeah, that's right, what I'll do.
Weird.
I'll hold on. Oh. I'm going to come through right now. Oh crap!
we are over. And I still have to add sound effects to our ridiculous skit.
We didn't do a skit. We just had microphones out on the street. What are you talking about, Brian?
Sorry. My mistake. But we still need to go.
All right. Fine. We can do that. And man, I'm so glad that we have the interns out there holding our place in line. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening.
Our content written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. Thanks, Cashfly. Bass is by Boom. Recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
There's your hobo train.
Perfect timing.
Also, happy 300th episode, Brian.
Yeah, happy 300th anniversary. Whatever. Man, why did they let us do this?